Hey, Real Talkers, happy International Women's Day. This edition of the Real Talk Roundtable is all about taking action. Our three expert guests, Margot Long, Jana Pruden, and Julie Savard-Shaw, look at the past, present, and future of women in the workforce and society at large. Where are we seeing progress? Where are we spinning our tires? What issues are girls and young women facing today, and how does that compare to generations previous? Plus, a fiery edition of The Flamethrower, presented by our friends at the DQs of Northwest Edmonton and Sherwood Park. As you sound off on safe injection sites, involuntary drug treatment, the Heritage Savings Trust Fund, and Universal PharmaCare. Let's go.
This is a Relay Project. Real Talk starts right now. Here's Ryan Jesperson.
Welcome you to a very special edition of the Real Talk Roundtable. It's International Women's Day. And in just a moment, we're going to be joined by three women making a huge impact in their own areas, in their own industries, but also with perspectives gleaned through years of experience that I think we're all going to benefit from. I imagine, considering the compilation of this roundtable, that will cover a lot of ground. We're going to talk about the justice system. We're going to talk about youth supports or lack thereof. We'll talk about the affordability crisis. We're going to talk about representation of women in boardrooms, representation of women in media, and more. All of that coming up with Margot Long, Jana Pruden, and Julie Savard-Shaw. But first, I want to let you know this episode is happening with the support of our friends at Relo. That's R-E-L-O. It's Alberta's top real estate school. And as a matter of fact, a lot of people across Western Canada are realizing that they can launch a rewarding career in real estate with Relo's affordable online courses that make it easy for you to pass your real estate exam. You get your license so you can start running your own business, setting your own hours, being your own boss. How good does that sound? And by the way, unlimited earning potential as well. Plus, you're going to be helping people every single day as they buy or sell their homes. Best part about Relo, they stay committed to your success through the process. So even after you've graduated, after you've launched, so to speak, they're still providing those supports. You can learn more, plus sign up for 20% off using the promo code REALTALK. That's all one word, online at relo.ca. As we welcome to the program, three movers and shakers, Margot Long joining me in studio. She's the president and CEO of YES, which is Youth Empowerment and Support Services. Margot, welcome to the studio. Julie Savard-Shaw is joining us remotely. Julie's the executive director of the Canadian Prosperity Project. Hi, Julie. And Jana Pruden is joining us remotely. Jana, you were to be in studio, but you're on assignment today. A journalist, of course, with the Globe and Mail. Why don't you tell us what's going on before we go any further? This is a recent development.
Yeah, the RCMP announced yesterday that there was a press conference. There'll be a technical briefing, but we don't know what it's about. It's sort of a mystery press conference, but it's something important. It's a high profile investigation. So word is that it relates to the years long investigation into irregularities in the UCP leadership race. When Jason Kenney was elected, that's what the rumor is, but we will not know till we get there. There's a technical briefing. We'll have to give up our phones, give up our laptops, no recording devices, and then it will be announced to the public and we'll be able to report on it then.
Okay. Well, people can follow you on Twitter at Jana_Pruden. Of course, you'll be covering this for the Globe and Mail. We appreciate you still making time for us. And when you need to pull shoot, you're going to shoot me a text and we'll let you get out of here. So we want to thank you for that. Julie, the Canadian Prosperity Project, for people that aren't familiar with it, introduce us.
Yeah, thank you for having me today. So the Canadian Prosperity Project was founded in April of 2020 by 62 senior executive women across the country who were afraid of the pandemic's impact on women, particularly as it relates to career advancement. And as we've seen, the pandemic has had numerous impact on women's careers. But now that the pandemic has receded, we're focused on actually addressing the barriers that were exacerbated during the pandemic.
Mm. So you have a career in politics before you got involved in this, right, as a political staffer.
I do.
Do you see parallels when it comes to your experience as a woman working in politics versus what you're applying your talents to, your perspective to now? Do you see parallel stories there?
Absolutely. And that's actually one of the reasons I decided to pursue this career or this job. You know, I think politics is still very much a male-dominated world. And while, you know, there's a lot of progress that's been made, as a woman and as a mother of a toddler, it was impossible for me to stay there. So I had to make the difficult decision to leave. You know, work-life balance is essentially non-existent. And as much as the daycare plan has helped, and it definitely has, you know, I long hours are just impossible with a four-year-old.
Yeah, no kidding, to say the least. Margo, you're nodding. You know all about balance. For people that don't know you, obviously in our home city of Edmonton, you're very, very well known for your work with youth empowerment support services and marketing and a long career in that sector. When it comes to International Women's Day, where's your head at? Like, did you wake up thinking about one specific thing this morning? Are you applying your focus across the board? Where are you at?
I woke up to texts from a number of my friends and female colleagues telling me, and with, you know, messages of love, telling me how appreciative they are of us and our friendship and the strong support we have. And I think that's what's resonating most right now is that difference. You know, you mentioned the years of experience. Thanks so much for that. You know, as I'm heading into my 50s.
I could have said months and months and months and months.
But, you know, I coming up as a kid in the 70s who wanted to be a Major League Baseball player and couldn't, and was very angry about the situation. There's a very big difference now, I think, in the way women relate to each other in business and in not-for-profit, and there's a lot of support, and I'm thinking of that today, of just how tight we are.
Yeah, that's absolutely amazing. Jana, when it comes to women in media, we can talk about present day, and I have some questions. I'd love to pick your brain on that, but you've also covered in past the history of women in media. About a year ago, you did a really, really neat deep dive into the Globe and Mail's history and women working there. What's changed and what hasn't over 100 years?
Well, that's a big question. Yeah, I wrote a piece. The Globe has a book coming out about our history. They asked different reporters to write about different elements of it. And I had the amazing fortune of writing about three women that really pioneered journalism at the papers that became the Globe and Mail. So that was the Globe, the Mail, and the Empire. And it just came out. It's actually online right now as a freestanding piece that people can read. And then the book is going to come out, I think, in the next few months. You know, I think like so many all areas, what we see is that there were pioneering women who worked very hard to prove that, you know, a woman could write, that a woman could report, that a woman would actually be capable of being a war correspondent, going to these far-flung places, talking to people. I feel really lucky in my career that I somehow had the fortune that all the way along I've had female bosses, I've had females in top editorial leadership from my first job at the Interlake Spectator. Both of my boss and the publisher were women, and all the way up to right now I have bosses who are both men and women. But I think we see women have fought really hard, and it's not just distant history. You know, you can see that women were still fighting in the 80s, the 90s, so that people like myself could have careers. And I think the fight is not over. And as I move into my 50s, I think about what can I do to make this road easier for women who are coming behind me, because we do know that women in journalism still face a lot of discrimination. They face way disproportionate amounts of online abuse, threats of abuse, and other barriers to being a fully equal member of a newsroom. And I think particularly for women of color, we know that newsrooms are still way too white. Mm-hmm. So yeah, the fight is, we've come a long way, babe, as they used to say, but, you know, it's not done, clearly. Mm-hmm.
Julie, you're nodding as Jen is talking about that. Obviously, the experience not limited to women working in media.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I'm nodding because it just illustrates perfectly the data that we just released in our report on Monday. So every year, the Prosperity Project releases a report called Gender Equity and Leadership. And what we do is that we ask the top 500 companies in Canada to voluntarily send us data at four levels of leadership in their company. So we look at the pipeline to leadership, senior management, C-suite, and then corporate directors. But we don't just look at men and women. We actually go deeper. So we look at the number of Black women, Indigenous women, women of color, 2SLGBTQ, and women with disabilities. And as Jaina said, I mean, right now, at least, women's advancement is really only for white women, and women from marginalized communities are truly being left behind.
So what do you do about that? Let's advance conversations, or I know that a lot of people, millions of people, are endeavoring to do that today and every day. How do you start to address that?
Yeah, I mean, I think my number one recommendation is collect the data, because until you actually know where your gaps are, you can't change anything. So we like to think that we're so diverse and so inclusive, but when you actually collect the data, and I can tell you that the majority of corporations in Canada do not collect the data to this day. So my number one recommendation is collect the data to see where your gaps are, and then move from a performative approach. If you truly want to increase the representation of women from diverse backgrounds in your leadership, it's not just about checking boxes. It's about changing the culture, changing the mindset. And I think that's the first steps I would take.
We'll link to your report in the show notes on the podcast and on YouTube so people can check it out. I'm looking at some numbers here, and while increases may be, like, I don't want to use the word meager, but there are increases. So I'm curious to pick your brain a little bit on whether or not you think there's been progress. You talk about women's representation of corporate directors, comparing 2022, 23, 24. So over the last 3 years, it's gone from a, you know, obviously a discrepancy of a ratio of 2-1 men to women in 22, virtually the same numbers in 2023, a slight increase of women, less than a percentage point, but then approximately a 10% increase last year, 57% men, nearly 38% women, and you see similar incremental increases, about a 15% increase from last year to this year, women's representation of executive officers. Are you encouraged by those numbers? I mean, I know that you'd love to see a 50% increase, but like, is it a step in the right direction? How do you process those statistics?
Absolutely. Like, there is progress. But I would just note that the graphs you just showed are a representation of all women. So it's not the disaggregated data between white women and women from intersectional backgrounds.
Right.
So if you look further on in the report, we actually go to each level and look at white women versus, you know, the other identities. So as a whole, yes, there is movement and women are faring, if I can say, better. Mm. There's still a lot of work to do. But if you look later on at the data and you go deeper, it's mostly white women that are advancing.
Got it.
The corporate ladder.
I encourage people to check out, and like I said, we will post the link in the show notes. It's really fascinating data to dig into, and we appreciate, number one, you commissioning the report, number two, making it happen. Margo, for people that aren't familiar with YES, with Youth Empowerment and Support Services, can you tell us a little bit about the organization and its mandate and how you think, like how your perspective on International Women's Day applies to the work that you and your amazing team are doing there?
You bet. So Youth Empowerment and Support Services started out 40 years ago as a youth emergency shelter. We've evolved over the years to adopt drop-in and housing and a number of things, but we've actually done a major revisioning with the collaborative that we're part of in the city of 30 youth agencies in addressing some of the gaps that we're seeing. And so YES is focused on that 24/7 intake for youth in crisis, helping triage, identify, and support them with whatever they need as that one door, and then look at them holistically and be able to assess what they need, what kind of housing, and then work with our partners to get them into the community. So we're trying to be much more community-based. We serve 15 to 24-year-olds. We go up to that age because brain development doesn't stop building that frontal cortex until age 25. And what we see, it's interesting with us, you know, the thing that I've learned most as CEO, and I knew this obviously growing up, is that representation matters. When we have young people coming in and they see Black, African, Caribbean staff, Indigenous staff, staff that match their gender identity or sexual diversity, it makes a big difference. they speak to it as, oh, there's somebody like me here. And that creates safety and consistency. We're pattern recognizers. It also creates that pathway for advancement in career for staff, to see somebody in a position where they want to be, to see themselves in that. And our role as leaders is to mentor, is to do that work that that is required to get them to a level or work and make sure we are removing barriers that we may not know about so that they are able to advance and have those places. Mm. Our role is to make way and remove those obstacles, I think.
A little later on in the roundtable, I want to ask you more about the demographic and some sort of dig into some of the youth, the population, so to speak, of the young people you serve. Is it over 1,000, under 1,000? Like, am I way off?
No, you're not way off. So YES serves over 700 youth a year.
700, okay, yeah.
But during COVID, so one of the tricky pieces with youth and crisis youth, unhoused youth, all of that is it's hard to count them. The normal counting that is done either with the by names list, you know, in housing, or the PIT count, where they go out in the community and try to count, you know, unhoused people, youth are hiding and they're couch surfing and they're not in those typical lists or areas. And so there's many more than we really have predicted. And during COVID, the collaboration built a platform called the Coordinated Youth Response. And on that, we only intaked youth that didn't have hadn't been clients of other agencies. So not at YES, not at Boyle, not at iHuman, Bentero, whatever that looks like. We serve 2,000 more youth, extra youth, in a year period, in addition to the 700 that YES saw. So we're looking at 3,000 youth at least. Amazing. In our city that are in that instability and crisis piece.
What a wake-up call that should be. Is the experience, generally speaking, question might be too general, for girls and young women or non-binary youth, dramatically different than boys or young men?
Yeah, so we actually see more male-identifying youth in the center, because women find safety with sexual relationships often. So they will use... do whatever they need to be in a situation that they feel they're taken care of. And so that creates more risk there for them as that's their survival mechanism. So we often have the men, which is it, you know, or the boys, which is tricky in itself, but young women are much more victim to predation, sex trafficking, and then just really unsafe situations for their survival.
I want to let people know right now, you can check out yes.org. That's YESS.org to learn more about what Margo and her team are doing, as well as ways to support them, ways to give, upcoming events and the like. That's Margo Long, President and CEO of Youth Empowerment and Support Services. Jana Pruden joining us with the Globe and Mail for a few more minutes till she's got to go to this mystery RCMP press conference. And Julie Savard-Shaw, Executive Director of the Canadian Prosperity Project, will dig more into their report as well coming up in just a moment. This conversation is happening with the support of Athabasca University. When we're talking about opportunity, that's what Athabasca is all about. And one of the reasons why more than 50,000 alumni say that they chose Athabasca University is because of its, world-class accredited online degrees and courses, but also the fact that it is an opportunity to complete your education whenever and wherever it works for you. You can open your options with the online offerings at Athabasca University. Of course, your only commute is to your device. They're driven by a strong commitment to empower learners worldwide. They embrace accessibility, flexibility, delivering exceptional online and distance learning opportunities. You can learn more about the AU Advantage by checking out athabascau.ca. Our friends at Kubi Renewable Energy are putting out the call to talented solar installers. If you're an electrician with your ticket, if you're an apprentice, if you're an experienced sales manager, maybe you've worked in HR, you're a great and skilled office administrator, Kubi is building its team across Western Canada, hiring for British Columbia and Alberta right now. They want you to help them grow clean energy in Canada. From their offices in Edmonton, Calgary, Kamloops, they're down in Lethbridge now as well. Shout out to Lethbridge. They're keeping the pace fast and the beer cold. You can see more about Kubi's work and what it would be like to work with them. The career opportunities are listed today at kubienergy.ca. And if you're thinking of bringing your outdoor space to life this spring or summer, your investment is going to be in landscaping. We personally recommend that you tap Eden Landscaping on the shoulder. A talented team of designers and installers will make sure that your vision is realized on time and on budget. They're a custom landscape builder with more than 20 years of on-the-ground experience in Edmonton and area. You can browse their portfolio, check out some of their amazing solutions, learn more about their approach, their design philosophy at landscapeedmonton.ca. We're speaking on International Women's Day with Margot Long, Julie Savard-Shaw, and Jana Pruden. Jana, I hope it's okay if we ask about the event you were at last night. It was hosted by the Alberta Council of Women's Shelters. Can you take us into it for those that weren't there?
Yeah. So yesterday I had a very domestic violence-y day, as I sometimes do. I was on a Canadian Journalism Foundation panel during the day talking about reporting on domestic violence and intimate partner abuse. And then last night was the Alberta Council of Women's Shelters annual gala, and I was a speaker there. And I think that that is when we talk about advancement of women and equality for women and, you know, safe, healthy lives for women, this piece of the amount of violence that women are facing in their homes in this province, and indeed every province, is really shocking and a really important piece of the conversation. Some of the numbers coming out from ACWS are just staggering. Like in Alberta last year, 60,000 calls for help. And we're talking about shelters that are operating in many cases with the barest budgets, with resources that have been essentially the same for decades. Thousands of women and children being turned away from shelters. You know, I've been working on in the past couple of years the story of Helen Naslund, a woman from Camrose who killed her abusive husband, and did a podcast series about that called In Her Defense. And a question that comes up again and again, the police ask it of Helen and people asked it of me, well, why didn't she just leave? I mean, what we see in the numbers is, first of all, just leaving is far more complicated than that, but that even if someone were able to, quote unquote, just leave, that the chances they can actually even get into a shelter are increasingly decreasing, I guess. And, you know, this all, it's all pieces of the puzzle. How could you advance in your career if you're not safe at home, if you're subject to financial abuse, coercive control, all of these other factors that make your life unsafe? We know that the rates of domestic homicide are extremely high. They happen every 6 days in Canada. And also a woman is the victim of an attempted murder by her partner every 2 days in Canada. And I think some of this speaks to, you know, you asked Julie some things that we can do, and something that has been really become so clear to me and such a passion of mine is that we need to get men involved. That so many times I go to give a talk somewhere about domestic violence, I look out in the room, it's all women. There's one man in there. And that the hugest piece of this puzzle of finding safety for women, equity for women, resources for women, is that men really have to step up and be part of that equation, because women are doing so much work already in their offices, in their chat groups, and we need men to be part of the solution.
I could tell, Margot, when Jana was talking about this, it was resonating with you.
Yeah, we're seeing, especially since COVID, we're seeing a huge increase in youth due to domestic violence. And one of the most concerning trends for me, so I've been at YES almost 7 years now coming up. In that time, we have had a normal ratio of, well, not a normal, but the ratio of children who have children's services files and are younger versus community youth has been 30-70. So 70% community youth, 30% young children's services youth. We're now at 50-50, and that is a direct increase in 15-year-olds. And the younger youth that we're seeing coming out of foster care or some of those issues, some of those places, and also from home because of domestic violence. So that increase is then, we see that direct impact. And then again, when we look at the support for youth shelters, it's the same paucity or lack of support. So you may have a young person that's old enough to not go with mom or whatever in a domestic situation, or leaves because of the domestic violence situation, but then they don't have a place to go either.
Mm. How much, like, a lot of your, of Yes's work is responsive. Like, it's responding to, like, the immediate need right now, you know? I wish the people of the podcast could see your facial expression, because you've got this, I don't know how to describe it. I should just get out of the way and let you take the question and the answer.
Thank you very much.
You know what I'm getting. Segue. You know what I'm getting at, right?
You just fed me that so perfectly.
So here we go.
So yeah, this is the problem, is we have been trying to band-aid this thing for 40 years. And we're looking at, and we being, I think, society, community, all of us trying to address, you know, or react with shelters or with this, here's addressing the symptom. And what we haven't been doing is strategically looking at what is the root cause, which is family breakdown and community breakdown, and that trauma, that childhood trauma and attachment breakdown that happens. We're not looking at the root cause, and then we're not being collaborative and strategic in addressing this. And so we're just throwing Band-Aids out and sticking fingers in holes and hoping every year that somehow something's going to be different. And it's not, because we're not looking downstream at what's really going on and fixing it there. And so that's why the collaborative formed, was to take that back and say, let's do good continuous improvement. Let's take the people in the process and fix this system ourselves. And let's come up with a strategy that not only addresses the immediate gaps of where do youth go in crisis right now, ER or EPS. And neither one of those are set up for youth in mental health crisis, domestic violence crisis, whatever that looks like on intake. And then where do they go, and how are we actually looking at them? So we have now got common outcomes that are holistic, built through, you know, physical, mental, emotional, spiritual, cultural, looking at the life skills and the well-being skills that young people need to have, that self-determination, so that we can prevent this further entrenchment into all of the, you know, sort of symptoms of this breakdown.
Thank you for sharing that. I appreciate that. We want, like, I just feel like this whole episode should be one big call to action, you know, and so I appreciate you sharing that. Jana, we recognize that your time is limited here, so I want to put one more in front of you before we go, and then we'll get to Julie. But when it comes to calls to action, obviously you're a national award winning journalist. You're someone who, when you release a podcast, it goes right to the top of the charts. Obviously people care about what you have to say and how you tell stories. What's a call to action today, something that you'd like this audience, your audience, to be thinking about on International Women's Day and beyond?
Yeah, I think one of the lessons that I took from Helen Naslin's case is really the power of collective action. You know, Helen was sentenced to 18 years in prison, and people got mad about it. And that's a wide variety of people, some really powerful people, a senator, a high-profile activist, defense lawyers, they got involved. But then also just a lot of everyday people signed petitions. Some people just wrote to Helen, you know, total strangers who connected with her in prison and shared their stories, supported her, believed her. And all of that really added up, I mean, in a very direct way. When Helen decided to appeal, and she did that, I think she got the confidence to do that in a lot of ways because the people who were personally supporting her. And then her lawyer went to the Court of Appeal, and the main argument, the most powerful argument that she had, was that the sentence was so unfit that it brought the administration of justice into disrepute. And they entered all of the petitions and letters and the public response. And I think there's a real lesson there that, you know, we think maybe just the powerful people can do something, people that are prominent, but actually everyone can do things. And it really does add up. And that could include, you know, using whatever position you're in. If you're a CEO, that gives you some level of power that you can do something in your world. Donating money, everybody likes money. The ACWS, I mean, I donated my speaker fee that I got yesterday. I donated it back to the Camrose Women's Shelter. I think that's really important. Those donations really mean a lot. You can donate your time. You can make a difference in your own life. I mean, literally everyone I meet, I'm such a drag to invite to cocktail parties because at some point I end up talking about domestic murder and like keeping families and women safe. And but I think that is important. And, you know, the call to action to the men is really, and particularly around the area of domestic violence, is to educate yourselves and maybe, you know, watch your friends for signs of red flags or dangerous behaviors and figure out how you can help them, or even if you see some of those behaviors in yourself. Because I know that the men in these equations, you know, they don't win either. In a murder-suicide, the man has not won when he's dead too. So I think there's a lot of work to be done in reaching out to each other and supporting each other. And individual people really do make a difference and I think save lives. So that's my call to action. Change someone's life, save someone's life.
But actually,
be part of.
But
yeah,
actually,
but actually.
Yeah. Jana, thank you so much. We appreciate it. We'll look to your reporting, obviously, on whatever's coming up, whatever's coming out of K Division, RCMP. That's Jana Pruden joining us from the Globe and Mail. When we come back, Julie Savard-Shaw is here, of course, with she's executive director at the Canadian Prosperity Project. I want to get back into their annual report, find out which industries are doing better than others when it comes to women or non-binary representation in boardrooms. Who is most especially lagging behind? What about private versus publicly held companies? What about across the country? Do we have data and insight on that? That's coming up on an International Women's Day edition of the Real Talk Roundtable, which is made possible with the support of sponsors like our friends at California Closets, who want to remind you that nobody does custom closets and storage solutions better than they do. You can make the most of your space with their custom organizational systems for the entire home, whether it's an entertainment center you're looking for, maybe it's a garage storage system you'd love to have. Who wouldn't love to get a little bit more organized in their boot room, their entryway, their mudroom? Maybe it's a home office that could double as a guest room. California Closets does it all, and their team of design experts have the experience to see things you may not even see, a realm of possibilities, and more affordable than you might think. You can request a free consultation today by checking out californiaclosets.ca. At Friesen Brothers, they know that great things happen around the family dinner table, and that's why they're proud to be number one, still family owned. Coming up on 75 years, if you can believe it. And also, to be putting out that family essentials flyer. We love this. We use it. Go to Friesen.com. You can see it there on the drop-down menu, or go see it in store. It's quality food for low prices every day. Friesen Brothers has always been focused on family, which is why they're proud to present their family essentials flyer. Apex Automation is hiring. Are you an engineer? You got your PEng, but the firm you're at right now either isn't doing work you remotely care about, or number two, you just don't feel like they're valuing you. Apex Automation, if you check out the careers link, apexautomation.ca, is building a culture where amazing people like you can do their best work. If you're ready to grow your career, challenge yourself, and learn new skills, you've come to the right place by exploring a career at Apex Automation. They're hiring extraordinary people and giving them the opportunity to develop and reach their full potential, technically and as human beings. Again, that's the careers link at apexautomation.ca. Hanging out with Yes CEO Margot Long in studio, and Julie Savard-Shaw, remotely executive director of the Canadian Prosperity Project. You've just released your annual report. Julie, when it comes to industries across Canada, we're talking about representation of women in boardrooms, in C-suites, as people refer to them. Are there certain industries doing really well, or are there some in particular that are really lagging behind on representation?
So I'll start by saying that all industries still have a way to go to achieve gender parity, but the finance and insurance sector is doing better than the majority of the other sectors. I would say that the manufacturing sector, and I was actually just yesterday speaking to the Canadian Manufacturers and Exporter, their conference for International Women's Day, and highlighted, you know, how there's still some work to do, but they're really dedicated to changing the data that they're seeing. And so that's what's really important. So I'm positive that we're going to see change. And then finally, in terms of the type of company that we're looking at, in the past, crown corporations have been better than the private sector, but we're seeing movement in the private sector now, which is a really good sign. So, yeah.
What do you think it is about? I'm citing your report here, the finance and insurance industry, as you just said, the strongest showing within the pipeline to senior management roles at 45%+. You say, but few other industries surpass 40% representation of women at any level of leadership, achieving gender parity, a challenge that many industries across Canada will need to overcome. How do you do it? Like, is there a pathway there? Is this part of what the Canadian Prosperity Project is putting forth? Is like a 3 or 5 or 10 step solution to getting there ASAP?
So we do have recommendations in the report. I mentioned some of them earlier, you know, culture change, moving away from performative action. But the reality is, like, none of these recommendations are new. I mean, the sector has been saying it for years. So I think now it's about really moving to implement what everyone has been talking about. Put the money where your mouth is. Partner with organizations like ours that can help you get the data so that you can identify your gaps and then support the women in your pipeline to leadership. Because And there's been this, I don't know if it's just on LinkedIn or whatnot, but there's this thing going on today on International Women's Day of like, oh, well, it doesn't have to do with like men or organization not wanting to, you know, have women in position of leadership. There's just no supply. Well, I'm calling BS on that, because I think there are so many women that are skilled and qualified, but that no one's taking a chance on them. A lot of companies, you know, are not identifying a pool of talented women in the more junior roles and cultivating them and focusing on them to give them the skills and the expertise they need to move along that leadership ladder. So it's just too easy to say that there's not a good enough supply. And I would challenge... I would challenge any company that genuinely can't find women, like, come see me. I'll find you some talented women that you can hire.
Margaret's got a big smile on her face and you're nodding and nodding and nodding. How come?
You got to build your own supply. I think that's where we have to get out of the way, and we have to identify and see that that's going to take some work. And that's our role, is to see that, to develop and build that and see it within the organization, instead of sort of... I went through that myself. And I think sometimes you have to make, as a leader, a decision of, I need to do this now, but what's my plan, you know, to build up other individuals? What is that role? And I think especially in social services, where you're not getting all, you know, sort of university type A individuals, you're getting this wide diversity. I think we often default to, here's what I need, instead of being creative and investing in leadership training, in that development of individuals and creating a long career path for them in an organization so that you don't lose them. That's our role right now, is to build it from within.
Before you came to Yes, what was that? Was that like 6 years, 5 years?
7 years.
7 years ago. Okay.
About,
yeah. Yeah. So you were, how do you describe, you were like marketing, advertising, branding. That was kind of your wheelhouse?
Business strategy and marketing strategy.
Right. Yeah. How does that industry do in the context of representation with women at different levels, you know, entry level all the way up to CEOs?
Yeah, it's changing. I definitely found that I found a lot less obstacles for myself in social services and nonprofit than I did in business. So that I feel like there are way more female executives, way more female leaders who are listened to and supported, and it's not a question. That their opinions aren't questioned like I saw in business, whether that's, you know, just inappropriate behavior or dismissing of opinion. I don't see that as much in social services, where the majority of the workforce is female.
Julie, does that surprise you or not surprise you to hear Margot say that?
No, it does not surprise me at all. And I would absolutely agree. And I think it's interesting, you know, to say the social service sector is majoritarily female, right? But if you look at salaries, for example, of workers in this sector, they are far, far lower than in any other sector. And I think it speaks to the fact that as a society, we just don't value the social sector, the care sector, the charitable sector as much as we do other like hard sectors like manufacturing, mining, finance. And that's part of that mentality shift that I think I've been talking about and others here have been talking about. We're not gonna, like, even if you have a 10-point plan and you implement it, if we are not changing the narrative and educating our children and our youth to think differently, you know, we're gonna have the exact same people around the decision-making table in 5 to 10 years.
Before we thank both of you for your time, I want to, like as we did to Jana, the call to action. I feel like both of you have kind of already given them to us, but I want to pick your brain on one more thing, Julie, and then we'll wrap with your charge to us and what you want us to walk with and think on today and beyond. But your report does, your organization, the Canadian Prosperity Project's report, does reference tokenism, and it talks about glass ceilings, it talks about glass cliffs as well. And I was hoping that we could get into that for people that either are or are not familiar with it. Let's get up to speed.
Yeah. So tokenism, the way we kind of allude to it is that is the box checking approach that I've been talking about. You know, so it's companies, organizations saying, oh, shoot, you know, all of our executives are white. We need to add diversity. So let's hire, you know, 2 Black women, 1 man of color and call it a day. And so on paper, they are checking the boxes of having a diverse, you know, executive, but in reality, their mindset and the culture that leads to the recruitment, but also the retention of diverse talent is not there. And that has a huge role to play because what we're seeing, and we refer to it as the leaky pipeline as well, is that some companies have actually become quite good at the recruitment process. So, you know, they are reaching out to new audiences. They're working with university groups to recruit diverse talents. But the problem is that once the talent is in the company or the organization, the culture is toxic. You know, there's not a recognition of inclusivity, of belonging. And so that talent leaves. And so that's that leaky pipeline piece. So they're bringing younger women, you know, in the more junior roles, but they can't retain them along the leadership ladder. And then the concept of the glass cliff. So that's a fairly new concept. You know, most people have heard about the glass ceiling where women are shattering the glass ceiling to help other women rise. So the glass cliff is one that is fairly recent. And I would say was really prevalent during COVID and since COVID. And that is that when an organization or a company is not doing really well, they tend to hire senior executive or leaders that they kind of don't mind throwing to the wolves at the end of the day if things go wrong. And so you have these remarkable women that are inheriting organizations or companies that are in shambles, that, you know, are going crisis after crisis. And of course, they're not fixing the problem in a few months, a few years. Like, this is the kind of role that requires support, that requires just so much more than one person fixing a problem. But what's happening is that they are hiring these women to fix the problem. The women can't fix the problem, and therefore they fall down the cliff. And so that's what we're referring to as the glass cliff.
I feel like I don't know if it's the proper example or if it fits. I mean, you're the former political staffer, Julie, not me. Does Kim Campbell qualify as having been marched off a glass cliff? Or is that more like the political party? It had nothing to do, like, it was, anyone would have been doomed to fail, but you have to wonder. Everyone's like, well, Kim Campbell, Canada's first female prime minister, but obviously her legacy was very short-lived. You could make a very strong and compelling argument. It wasn't entirely her fault. I'm saying that facetiously. Obviously, it wasn't her fault. The Brian Mulroney Conservatives were doomed at that point. Would that be an example, or am I off?
So I'm not going to comment on anything political.
Oh, okay. Okay.
but a good example, you know, I mean, there's so many. Like what happened at Harvard is a perfect example.
Claudine Gay, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I don't have
any. Enemy Paul, leader of the Greens, maybe. I mean, you know, there's layers of complexity.
Again, I'm not going to comment.
You're not
going to
comment
political.
On that. I can comment on it. You can like nod or, you know, I'm just, yeah. But no, I appreciate you making that point. But before we thank you to both of you, I would love a call to action. And I feel like inherently in your message, there have been 100 of them already, which is great. I want to thank both of you for your participation here, Jana Prudence as well. But Julie, what's something you want us to walk with today and beyond?
I'll say two things. One is collect the data so that you can know where your gaps are, but that's more at like an organizational corporate level. But as an individual, and I think we've had a conversation here about the importance of men being included, I just want to encourage people to look at, and actually it's a group that's fairly active in Alberta, which I believe is where you're based. It's called Next Gen Men. And so basically it's a group that works with men and young men and boys to change that narrative about what masculinity is. And I think is just so important if we want to actually change and move towards gender equality.
Okay, cool. I'm looking at nextgenmen.ca, changing the way we see, act, and think about masculinity. Appreciate you putting that on our radar. We had a fascinating episode of Real Talk just about, I don't know, less than a month ago on masculinity. People can search our archives for that on the podcast as well as on YouTube. Interesting research out of the University of Calgary on that. Margo, take this wherever you want. Your call to action for us.
I want to see courageous leadership. For me, leadership is a choice, not a role. We are faced with those choices every day. And I'd like to see us stand up and be courageous when we see things that aren't okay, when we need to make changes in policy or organization. And when I need to see some of that change happen individually, because I think that's what we're missing right now is that courageous view to change and make a difference. And instead we're waiting, I think, for government, for, you know, whoever else, and there's a lot of this. And we all have a responsibility.
I like that, courageous leadership. You can learn more about what Margo and her team are doing, the life-saving supports and empowering supports at Youth Empowerment and Support Services at yes.org, and the Canadian Prosperity Project.ca is where you'll find Julie's team's work. That's their annual report card on gender diversity and leadership available there. Julie Savard-Shaw, the executive director of the Canadian Prosperity Project. Thank you to both of you for participating. We really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks, Julie. I know your morning's busy as well. Thanks for setting aside some time for us. That's great, Margo. Feel free to, if you need to take off, we get it. We got the flamethrower coming up. I'm not sure if you want to be anywhere near me when I start spitting fire.
Oh, my.
These are real emails sent to talk@ryanjespersen.com, so people get all riled up every Friday so we get into it.
I get it.
Yeah. Sometimes you just need to capture the attention of, you know, 20,000 people. You just got to grab them hold, you know?
I believe I've sent you some of those.
Yeah, you have. I didn't know I was able to read those ones publicly or not. I'm not sure. Usually when they're submitted via text message, we preserve the privacy of those. Anyway, much respect and mad love to you, my friend. These conversations are made possible with the support of friends of ours, like the team at Complete Care Restoration. You can find them online. And listen, it's a nightmare situation. Pretty much any situation they're stepping into, a lot of times in the summer, you're talking about people that have had, you know, their basements have flooded or like sewer pipes have backed up and like nothing worse, right? Or wildfires swept through. I mean, we're talking about people losing a huge part of their regular everyday lives. It's a devastating loss, which is why you need to trust the team that's going to be getting you back on your feet, restoring your property, rebuilding your peace of mind. You don't trust a project like this to just anybody. Remember, if, and they hope it never does, they hope you never call them, but if disaster strikes, remember, Complete Care Restoration. Also wanted to give a big shout out to our friends at Ladywood and congratulate them on the launch of their apparel line. You can check out ladywoodboutique.myshopify.com. We're going to link to it in the show notes here. Ladywood, female owned, is unapologetically about celebrating your passions and exploring the things that ignite your soul. And in celebration of their launch, Ladywood wants to send you and your ladies to the Real Talk Golf Classic coming up on Thursday, June 20th in support of the Real Talk Julie Rohr Scholarship. All you have to do to qualify is send an email with your name and the reason why you think Ladywood should send you and your ladies golfing. That's to golf at ryanjesperson.com. We'll be sending them all the submissions. The contest closes on the 31st of March. It's made possible by the team at Ladywood. And our congratulations to them on launch. And before we get to the flamethrower, I just wanted to mention really quickly how proud we are to partner with our friends at Alberta Views. That's the magazine for engaged citizens. Fresh perspectives on Alberta 10 times a year delivered to your door because you have the promo code AVRJ. Just think Alberta Views, Ryan Jesperson. They're going to knock 50% off an annual subscription. Okay, these are paper copies delivered to your door. You can hold them and hang on to them and drink coffee and read them cover to cover like I do for just $20 a year. Come on. Are you serious? We are. The promo code is AVRJ at albertaviews.ca. Before we get to the flamethrower, the live chat today was banging. We didn't really have a chance to jump into it, Johnny, but I wanted to recognize some of the... I noticed that Kimberly here, by the way, Margo, what you were talking about, Kimberly, before we said it in the chat, she says, I worked in nonprofit for several years where there tends to be more representation for women in leadership. She says, partly, though, I think I'm sure because the salaries are lower. So she kind of nailed it on both fronts there, which I thought was an interesting one. How about this one from Bunny Slippers, who says, when I interviewed for a senior management position, I was asked if I was starting a family anytime soon. My question back to them was, do you ask the male candidates the same question? She said, I'm pretty sure that they don't. I appreciated this from Heidi, who said, men need to stand up to seemingly benign sexism, weird comments, jokes, biases, whether women are present or not, which I thought was a really great comment. Alberta Girl says there's systemic discrimination against talented women, and it starts in our schools. Interesting comment from Garth. Garth, thanks for your contribution on our super chat. We appreciate that. $10 towards the kitty. Says, I wouldn't be shocked to find out that feminism was hijacked by men in its inception because the way it's imploding has to be the work of the patriarchy. That from Garth. And this was interesting as well. This from Cassandra, who says, I worked in the auto industry and there are very qualified women that should be promoted to management that aren't, not to mention a prolific amount of sexual harassment that takes place. That from Cassandra. She says it gets worse, quite frankly, when women are promoted. I like MA just thanking everybody for their contribution and thanks for their thoughts. This one from Kenzie, who said promoting a woman because she's a woman is not acceptable either. I thought that was neat when Julie touched on, not neat, but important, when she touched on the idea of tokenism and the glass cliff. I think I'm glad that was part of our conversation there as well. Ken, I love this. Ken jumps in the super chat with $10.01 to one up Garth. I love it. Keep it. We support that. Ken says, in 40 years of business, I've been fortunate to work with incredible women. I found that they're less reactionary, better listeners, better communicators. What does this mean? He says they don't shitpost Jesperson shows for attention. Ooh. I like that. Maybe I missed something there, I'm sure, but I appreciate that from Ken.
I was just going to say that. Like, people are often like, well, women, they're emotional. They can't. I find them more calm in situations. I feel like men, most of the men I know in positions of power especially, they kind of take everything to heart and it really, you know, it knocks a chip out of them. Whereas women are like more, they're just calmer and they know they have, you know, a step to go, something else to learn. I saw another comment in here today early on in the chat that was like, what did it say? It said, hiring on race or gender, if you're doing that, you should be jailed. And I just thought in my head, I'm like, but they've been doing that forever. All your favorite things would be gone. Look at the CEOs of Coca-Cola and Apple and every major corporation. It's old white guys. What are you talking about? Yeah, all they do is hire on based race and gender.
That's a fair point. The numbers that and I recommend that people again check out the Canadian Prosperity Project's report yourself. Like, scroll through it because you'll see the numbers are wild and not in a good way when it comes to representation, in particular of women of color, Black, Indigenous. Like, it's they really break it down, and you can get into it. You're talking about less than 1% representation in boardrooms, which is just wild. Seventh Pilot in here in the chat said, I believe there are many of the trades that women can very much succeed in. It just reminded me of, this is not an advertisement. They're not paying us to say this, but womenbuildingfutures.ca is a really neat initiative for women who are curious about careers in the skilled trades or transportation. And another complimentary shout out, because it's something that I know you and I both support. As a matter of fact, you'll be working with them today, Johnny, is Elevate Aviation and the work that Kendra Kincaid and her team are doing, launching women into careers in aviation at elevateaviation.ca. A really neat initiative. And this is something I know that's resonated with you. You're working with them through the year.
Yeah, I do all their graduations, and I told you I didn't think it would, but it turned into like this big emotional thing where every time I go there now, I mean, they're giving away free education to women in every job you could think of, from a pilot all the way, I don't want to say down, but any job that's in an airport, they're giving you free education and tools.
It's amazing.
And getting you a job to do it, whether you want to be a pilot, whether you want to be out on the runways flagging, whether you want to deal with baggage, whether you want to be in security. And the women there who are from Canada, they also come from other places, who really were, you know, people who thought they were just going to be mothers or this or that, and now have been empowered with these tools, and they're, you know, right next to men and other people, other professionals on the same level, and all of them get emotional, and then I do too, and I start thinking, oh my gosh, why don't more people know about Elevate? So I'm glad every time you bring them up, because they're growing so much, not only here but across the country. And they, every time I go there, every grad, it's the space is smaller because there's more and more people in there, right? Yeah. So it's just always evolving, always growing. You should, if right now, if you're a woman who's like, you know, I want to level up, I want to get a new job, just go to ElevateAviation.ca. Sign up for free. There's literally like zero cost, and you could have a new career.
I wanted to reference, and this is why we got busted. We were sharing my screen, and I started doing a Google search. I screwed up your whole presentation. No, that's on me. But I wanted to recognize the Real Talk episode that we did. It was called Lifesavers and Game Changers, and it was a really powerful episode, and we'll link to that. But do you remember that? It was the a Real Talk roundtable in studio celebrating what's happening at Elevate Aviation. Fewer than 10% of pilots are women. Fewer than 5% of aircraft maintenance technicians are women. Fewer than 20% of air traffic controllers are women. And Kendra and her team want to change that. So you can either check out the show notes or just search Lifesavers and Game Changers on Real Talk. What about this from Fancy Boy? It says, Jesperson talks a big game. Will you be willing to give up your job for a female minority? which is, I don't think it's about like giving up my job. But I do think it's about like setting the table, providing opportunity for people, recognizing that there are areas that we can do better, seeking to understand,
100%.
Challenging ourselves, being open to that. And
watch
so,
our credits.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know,
they're filled with women.
But I don't want to get into the whole like, oh, actually at our company at Relay, we do, but I could, I mean, I could own Fancy Boy right now in his dumbass comment by that, or I could point out that I do co-host a podcast with as you described it, a female minority who's smart as fuck, but we're on hiatus right now because Supriya, number one, experienced personal tragedy, and number two, is now a senior advisor for the Prime Minister, no big deal. So there's that. We produce other podcasts like The Discourse with Erica Brudies and Cheryl Oates, two women that have climbed that ladder in politics and risen to the highest positions for two different premiers. But again, like there's this and that and the other, the Julie Rohr Scholarship, the fact that we're providing this year, thanks to you, the Real Talkers that support our Real Talk Golf Classic, that this year, the Real Talk Julie Rohr Scholarship is sending three people to university and covering a $5,000 of each of their expenses. I mean, I wasn't going to sit here and flex on this.
I was just going to say, you don't have to do this.
No, but you know what? Maybe it's because Fancy Boy or people like Fancy Boy think that, you know, says there's too many white males on this talk show. We need to diversify.
And we just had three women on. And an indigenous leader yesterday. And people of color every week.
It's a troll that doesn't use their real name. Johnny's getting all fired up here. No, but the show walks the walk. And like, can we do better? Sure. And do we endeavor to do better? Sure. But at the same time, like Fancy Boy, number one, don't snap your nails typing on the keyboard, and number two, like, just ask a simple question of yourself if you can, which is, what are you doing and I'll worry about what I'm doing. What I'm doing is very public and front-facing, and you can see it, which is why I'm happy to lay it out. But the challenge for all of us today is, how do we do better? Like, how do we seek to understand, learn more? I think that our three guests today have done an unbelievable job of putting things on our radar that for some of us may have been apparent. For some of us, they may have been epiphanies. And for all of us, I hope that it serves as inspiration on this International Women's Day. Now, we do have an opportunity for you to spit fire every single week. And oftentimes, the situation calls for that. It's a little something courtesy of our friends at the DQs of Northwest Edmonton and Sherwood Park. This is your chance to basically bring the heat, right? We want to see your hot takes. We want to hear it all. It's the Flamethrower, presented by the DQs of Northwest Edmonton and Sherwood Park. This one from Gerald, inspired by our conversation with Anthony Fury and Ewan Thompson earlier this week about supervised consumption. We were talking about Ewan's Alberta Views cover. This is What's Wrong with Rehab. He investigates the Alberta government's approach to the opioid crisis. Gerald says, you know, one of the things I think that's being missed in these anecdotes when we're talking about supervised consumption or people drug poisoning, overdoses, you know, overdosing maybe four times in one day, is that it's paramedics, EMTs, firefighters that are often saving them, not nurses at safe injection sites. And then to take it a step further, if they were using safe supply instead of toxic drugs, those numbers drop even more. Gerald says oftentimes the arguments against safe injection and safe supply actually prove the validity of the programs. That from Gerald. I love that one. What about this one from Anton, who says, Jess Boy, I've been a listener since day one, and the show has never been better. Thanks, Anton. Says, on your March 5th episode with Cheryl Oates, Erica Baroudis, you were talking about involuntary drug treatment for the exceptional case when someone has been brought to life with a dose of naloxone. He says, as a police officer who works in the downtown core, I can assure you this is an accurate description. I've seen countless people in a near-death state only to be revived because my colleagues and I stumbled upon them by happenstance, called for EMS, and administered naloxone. And yes, the anecdotes about the same person being saved by naloxone several times a week or even multiple times in the same day are real, says Anton. Your comment to Eric about involuntary drug treatment being akin to incarceration gave me pause. We, the police, frequently apprehend people who are at risk of imminent harm to themselves or others under the Mental Health Act. It's called Form 10. Then it's seen as necessary and compassionate. That person's taken to hospital for medical intervention, whether they consent to it or not. He says, why should it be any different for someone who's at risk of harming themselves through a severe substance use disorder? Now, I'm not saying that everyone who struggles with substance use disorder needs to be forced into involuntary treatment, but in some rare cases, these folks need this level of intervention because of the very real risk they present to themselves and society. I mean, if I was asleep at the wheel driving off a cliff or worse, a crowded sidewalk, I sure hope somebody would intervene. I think we need to be open-minded when it comes to tackling issues of substance use disorders. There is certainly, says Anton, certainly a place for harm reduction, but in some cases it's woefully inadequate. I appreciate your show because it's like a workout for my critical thinking muscles. Keep up the great work. Anton, thanks for serving the city. Stay safe out there, pal. What about this one from Ben, who wants to talk about the Heritage Savings Trust Fund? He says, Jespo, obviously putting money aside for the Heritage Fund is not a bad idea in principle. It's what Finance Minister Horner told us they're going to do. It's what Premier Danielle Smith, I'm sure, will talk about a little bit when she's on the show with us Wednesday, March 13th in studio. Ben says, but why not tax those oil giants a little bit more in order to fund such an endeavor, topping up the Heritage Fund? He says the UK implemented a windfall tax on ballooning oil profits, and so far it's been very successful. First, it was a 25% surcharge. They've now increased it to 35%. Built into the legislation is the removal of the tax if oil prices fall below a certain level. Note, this was done by a conservative government. Ben says maybe this would have allowed them to follow through on her income tax reduction promise. It's our oil. The profits should be in our pockets, not Suncor's shareholders. That from Ben. And this one from Kat, who says, Jespo, I want to offer my thoughts on Alberta's stance of opting out of a national pharmacare program. I'm a type 1 diabetic. I have latent adult diabetes. I got it in my 30s. And a few years ago, I decided I needed to do something about my declining health. So I started working out and trying to manage my blood sugar. I'm a person on AISH, and I use the Alberta Blue Cross plan. And under this conservative government, I've seen my allotment of test strips cut to $600 a year. I don't know, have context on that, but Kat goes on to say this is less than 2 blood checks a day, which for a type 1 diabetic is not good at all. I qualified for compassionate care for a CGM, that's a glucose monitor, so I pay half price, and I went on to take my my A1C from almost 11% to 6%, and I've been stable for over 2 years. Great news, Kat. Says I lift weights, I'm changing my health. Hopefully the damages from the high sugars in past will diminish. We wish you well. Kat says what concerns me, though, is that the premier says the provincial plan covers diabetics. When I heard that, I choked on my coffee. A CGM, this continuous glucose monitor, is such a game changer. Ask any diabetic. It's not even comparable to these finger pokes. I haven't had it to visit the doctor so much. Money saved. I've not had to go to the ER. Money saved. The government can't see it this way. You know, a CGM costs more than a regular meter, but honestly, not that much. How much does a trip to the ER cost? Can you ask Premier that question? They're stepping over dollars to pick up pennies. I thought conservatives were fiscally responsible. Now, I know there's a plethora of other stories, and I'm just telling you about my experience, but this pharma plan, I'm a Canadian before I'm an Albertan. This is outrageous, and we must not accept it. That from Kat, who sent their email to talk@ryanjesperson.com. The Flamethrowers, presented Fridays on Real Talk by the Dairy Queens in Northwest Edmonton. That's Palisades, Nemeo, Newcastle, Westmount, and in Sherwood Park on Baseline Road. Real Talk is taking Monday off because we're working on a very important film project in Jasper that I can't wait to show you. Tuesday, Nehed Nenshi will join us. I can't tell you what we'll talk about. You'll find out Tuesday. And Wednesday, the Premier of Alberta, Danielle Smith, joins us live in studio. We'll see you then. Have a great weekend.
Real Talk is hosted by Ryan Jesperson. Executive producer, Josh Dunford. Technical producer, John Hicks. General manager, Katie Cook-Chivers. Account coordinator, Lawrence Derlego. Human resources, Lena Shepherd. Website design, Mike Johnston. Voiceover by me, Carrie Skelton. Real Talk's editorial board is Supriya Duvetti, Ahmed Ali, Brandy Morin, Ann Castleman, Corey Hogan, Harmon Candola, Catherine O'Neill, and Chris Henderson. Member Emerita, Julie Rohr. Real Talk is recorded in Edmonton, Alberta, on Treaty 6 territory, the traditional and ancestral territory of the Cree, Dene, Blackfoot, Soto, and Nakota Sioux, home to the Métis settlements and the Métis Nation of Alberta. Real Talk is a Relay project. For more, check out ryanjesperson.com.